Hey, and welcome back to another episode of the Dope Black Women podcast. Each week, you'll hear from Black women from around the world, talking about the stories and issues that matter most to us. This week, I'm speaking to two drag kings about their work, performing in drag and masculinity. Allow them to introduce themselves.
My name is Ade, like a night. I go by Wesley Dykes when I'm performing drag. And I guess in that context, I'm a drag king.
Nice. I'm Isabel Adamoko-Young. I use she, her, and my drag character, Izzy, a man, uses he, him. And I perform mainly with Pex Drag Kings. And then I'm an actor and voice artist aside from that.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being on this week's episode of Dope Black Women. Me, myself, I love drag as an art form. I love the creativity and the diversity that goes into it. And I think it's really interesting how drag is changing and, you know, what even is drag is changing. And especially as we're kind of, you know, live events are becoming more and more of a thing. And hopefully, we're coming back to some kind of normality on that. I just thought it was such a interesting opportunity to have this conversation. So I think most people will know what drag queens are. They kind of have seen it on TV or in film, but, you know, people, I guess, aren't as familiar with drag kings. So how would you guys describe it and how did you get into it?
Certainly, like when I started, I wasn't familiar with drag kings. Like I'd never seen a drag king perform. Knew of drag queens, obviously. But yeah, I guess a sort of a potted definition, and I obviously would be really interested to know what Ade thinks about this, but I would say a drag king is a performer who is like most likely not read as a man day to day. So like the obvious sort of inversion would be drag queens are men and drag kings are women, but that's a very limiting view. But it's a performer who wants to explore masculinity and like shed a light on it, critique it, wear it and then take it off again. Just kind of play with the concept and like, yeah, show how much of gender is performative.
Yeah. I would say similarly, yeah, I just find being a drag king is a space where you're able to use masculinity as fodder. And if you're a drag queen, then you use femininity as fodder, like whoever you are, however you identify outside of drag space.
Yeah. And how did you guys get into it? I mean, do you remember the first time getting into drag and what that experience was like?
It was very interesting. My first time doing drag was on Halloween.
The classic.
Yeah, exactly. You know, able to hide in broad daylight. I'd seen a couple of drag kings who were in the town I was living in at the time. And I hadn't really like thought about drag kings as a thing. Like Isabel, I also knew what drag queens were, but didn't realize people were doing it in other ways. So I just decided that I was going to do it at one of the like gay nights that happened every week. And it was very fun and exciting. But when I started, it was definitely more of an entertainment sort of space, and nowadays I'm a lot more intentional about playing with gender and challenging things within my body and using it in spaces outside of just like a bar or club, like theatre spaces and things like that.
Yeah. Isabel, what about you? Do you remember the first time?
It's funny, like when people ask me that, normally I sort of naturally go to like, oh, when our drag collective started, which was just out of university, coming up on 10 years ago now, which is absolutely terrifying. But then I was like,
oh, wow.
I know. But then I was like, actually, no, I remember the first time I like performed as a male character, and I was actually 7 years old, and I was playing this wizard called Moloch in like a family and friends like silly production. And I remember the feeling of like suddenly being like, oh, if I wear these clothes and like perform in this different way, it's like I'm me, but like another version of me, and I can do different things to what I would normally do. And I remember feeling that, like, obviously not, I wasn't some like like genius like critical child, but I was like, gender is performative. No, but you know, like kids know, and I felt that in my body. I remember that sensation totally.
You don't know the words, but
exactly
that. You know, you don't have the vocabulary, but you understand the feeling of it.
Precisely. Yeah. And then yeah, with Pex, we it was a little bit more deliberate, only slightly though. We were very very unknowledgeable to begin with. But yeah, a group of us basically got together to try out masculinity, and then we literally just rented a room and like had Google and like music videos and just kind of ideas and a bit of costume, and we ended up making our first show out of that, and then went on to to perform as Pex Drag Kings.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, you both touched on this about how drag has always been political, how it's always kind of like been a political act, even though it's still entertainment. It has this, you know, deliberative message behind it, I suppose you could say. And I guess, like, how have you both found being women in that space that is usually dominated by men, whether it's, you know, men talking about masculinity or men talking about homophobia, whether it is, it's usually usually by and large from a male perspective what we see dominated in drag. I mean, how did you guys find your voice in that and find your space in that?
Certainly when Peck started, we part of what brought our founders to ask the question of like, what is the quote unquote opposite of a drag queen? Like, where are all the female performers and the non-binary performers in this conversation? And that grew out of the fact that there was a drag queen collective that was just sort of up and coming at our university. So PEX was literally born as a response, and has kind of we've continued to like find our way in that space. I think it's probably quite different as a group than it is as a solo performer, because quite often we'll produce our own shows, which means obviously you're still answerable to venues and so on, and like we still do lots of kind of nights where there are other performers, but there's a little bit more maybe like we've had to forge our own spaces kind of thing. And I'm very aware that like when I'm trying to sort of get on a mixed bill, it's in someone else's hands, and so often queer spaces have historically been dominated by men. So it's definitely something you have to kind of navigate.
Yeah. I think nowadays my gender is so everything in the air anyway, that being a woman is just like a drop in the ocean of the concept of gender for me. And so, but I'm grounded in the fact that that's been a lot of my life experience and how I've been read and how I've been treated and how things have sort of reacted against my existence. I think because I started doing drag in a very small town when I was living in Canada, I wasn't that engaged in a scene that was like very, very gay. It was like gay male dominated, but the town was so small. So it didn't even feel, as a Londoner, it didn't even feel like, it didn't sort of like feel like that thing was so strong in the way that I could obviously see it in like the media, for example, and when I would go to like bigger cities and see it and notice that like obviously these events are more funded and all that kind of thing. Being more in the scene, I would say coming back to London and being more active in the drag king scene here, and then spending a lot more time being in a Cocoa Butter Club, I don't really like have to interact with like cis men like in that way, like when it comes to my drag. Like I've had occasional gigs when I've been in like really specifically like gay male or like cis male cis men spaces, but that's not the majority of my space, to be honest, thankfully. I haven't had to engage with that too much in my drag. At the beginning, like there was that, like it was a small town, but still a white gay scene. And there was like the ignorance and the racism and all that kind of stuff. But also drag was a lot less of it was a lot more like playful for me then. So it was like, go out, make some money, not have to pay for drinks for the night. It was just like, okay, whatever. And it was those experiences were notable to me outside of me being in drag, like because I was like one of few black faces in that gay space anyway. But since coming back to London and being a lot more intentional about where I'm present, I just don't really do my drag in places like that, because it's not even really for that audience. So
would you say, when you think about those early years when you were performing in the small town, would you say, like, in terms of the criticism or the abuse or even just that, you know, the funny looks you received, was that more to do with gender, or do you think it was more to do with race?
I think it was more to do with race.
Really? Yeah.
It was a lot more racialized, because I'm not like particularly femme presenting anyway. So like, and that sort of black woman experience, I already sort of experienced like masculinization in that way. So I don't think drag was too far off of a concept of like how people saw me anyway. It was most of the experience was people just reacting to blackness in whatever weird ways white people do what they do. Yeah.
It's such a toxic and such a kind of, I guess disappointing is the word that I would use when I think about it. You know, the fact that you have a space that is looked down upon by a lot of people within the mainstream. And then within that marginalized, it's like you have people that will, you know, be racist or be transphobic. And it's like, are you not getting that, like, this is supposed to be a safe space for so many people, and then it's just ruined? Like, you see it all the time with like the RuPaul's Drag Race franchise and how the queens of color get abuse from so-called fans. And yeah, it's such a shame, and it's so disappointing that happens, and it still happens.
Mm.
Yeah, Isabel, I mean, how much has your kind of your race played a part in your drag journey, would you say?
For me, I would say it's probably been more internal. Like, again, because of having PECs as the sort of the safe environment, the little bubble within which I've been creating work, like, we'll have guests in. But to be honest, anyone that's coming to the show, hopefully they're not like the kind of like lovely, kind queers that are also,
yeah, like why have you spent your money to like hate me? Like,
just yeah, leave. That would be pretty strange. I guess I will say that, like, you know, occasionally there have been things like people will, so audiences might overstep boundaries because you've done like a sexualized performance. They then think that they have the right to touch you or the right to like speak to you in a certain way, and I have no doubt that, like, obviously with the kind of legacy of like people having access to black people's bodies, I'm sure that's at play there as well, but I wouldn't say that's the norm in any way. Like, that would be a few isolated incidents. Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's definitely an element where I'm like very interested by what performing sexuality for an audience, and like with the background that PEX comes from and with the kind of, I guess, like average theatery queer audience is like majority white, what performing my, like me performing sexuality for that audience is definitely something that I sort of have an ongoing question around. And like, you know, when I feel at my most free and I'm like connecting with an audience, there's still a part of me that's kind of like, okay, what are you getting from this? And like, what's the power dynamic? But I feel very lucky that with PEX and with the work that we make, it always feels deliberate, and it always feels proud, and it always feels like I'm in the driving seat.
Mm-hmm. That's such an interesting point, because it reminds me of being at comedy shows and say the comedian on stage is black and they tell a joke to do with race, and you look around the audience and some white people are laughing, and it's like, why are you laughing? Like, and it is that awkward thing. It's like, well, they are here to enjoy themselves. Like, are they being an ally? Like, you know, and I'm sure that's something you battle with, like, in your head a bit.
Yeah. I mean, performing for white audiences, discuss. Yeah.
Like, there's also, yeah, a different thing, like, because drag, being a kid drag king or drag thing, is a little bit more niche. The audiences are a little bit more niche. So I would say in that respect, like, the likelihood of harm does lessen slightly. And even smaller than, which I perform a lot with the Cocoa Butter Club. They're like my main sort of like performance gang, and that's because it's a black and POC cabaret space. And so that means that even if we're doing a show where there's a lot of a white audience, like, my entire experience of being on stage and backstage is just interacting with black people or people of color, and that just means a very different thing in terms of comfort level, in terms of standing in your ideas and your capabilities and creativity. And Cassie and Sadie, who run the Cocoa Butter Club, are very intentional about the care of the performers. So that makes all the difference. That's the thing when you're being a token on a lineup as opposed to being a respected performer on a lineup. People are actually checking for your well-being, and that just means that you get to actually be in your performance as opposed to thinking about all this other stuff that distracts from it.
So real. Yeah. And also, I guess I would say, like, that's something that I so appreciate about specifically drag kinging is, like, you're not necessarily there to just, like, entertain. Like, you're there to challenge and to ask questions and to, like, invite an audience to think in a different way. So it's not just like, I think, it, you know, I might feel differently if I was just like, I don't know, just trying to, like, gratify. Do you know what I mean? But there are so many different things at play, and that's, like, there's a power in that as well.
Yeah. And there's, like, also, I think because people are just very used to femininity being used as, like, a joke. That inherent challenge of masculinity being what's being made fun of is something that's basically almost always new for someone at a show. I think that you don't quite get that same thing at drag queen shows where there's people who haven't seen drag queens before. But I think almost every single drag king show I've ever done, there's people, always people who have just, like, I've never seen a drag king before. And that's, I totally agree with you, Isabel, in that way of saying that, like, yeah, you're mere sort of existence in that way, like, is a challenge and a jar in a way that people need, yeah. I think.
So I'm sure you two have seen the news around RuPaul's Drag Race, the UK season 3, and that one of the contestants will be the first cis female drag queen on the show. Victoria, I think her name is.
Victoria Scone.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever think to play with drag queens? Is that something you've ever, you know, wanted to do, or do you think is that just a very different art form? You know, where do you stand on that kind of thing?
Yeah, totally. Like, interestingly enough, I think I'm probably the most comfortable exploring my femininity now since I've gotten more comfortable doing drag kinging. Like, diving into being a drag king and diving into, like, what masculinity is supposed to be has just made me sit so much more comfortably in my body, and in femininity as well. And so I don't know if I would do it as, like, stage performance, but I'm definitely into it in terms of just playing, like, with, like, at home, makeup, all those sorts of things. I mean, who knows, to be honest, it's not impossible. Like, maybe I'll, do you know what I mean? I think there's some things that are on the list because they connect to my drag character, but I just, yeah, I think that's totally, that's the point, that's the thing, is that it's such a, like, cis male dominated space and gender's fake, so why shouldn't anyone be allowed to play with it?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like definitely be up for it. I think one of my favorite exercises that we did on that, like, our first day trying drag, was a sort of sliding scale, and it's something that we still use in our PEX workshops to this day. Is basically, like, if you imagine that there is a spectrum, masculinity to femininity, for the purposes of the exercise, and then basically place yourself at different points along it. So, you know, we'd walk in, like, we'd be like, oh, what does neutral look like or feel like to you? And then what would be, you know, a number 2 on the scale? What would be a 5? What would be a 10 of masculinity? And, you know, it's just a method of exploration, but it's so exciting. And obviously we, in our work, have taken ourselves more along the masculine side of the spectrum, but I just think that big breakthrough, and what I still find so exciting about drag to this day, was realizing that, like, you can put yourself wherever on the spectrum whenever you want in every second of the day. So, like, absolutely, I can see that there'd be so much fruit in, like, exploring the femininity as well. And for me, it was a very deep, like, that was like an existential realization for me, that I had, through my early years development, chosen my place on the femininity spectrum and, like, religiously stuck to it and let other people police it. And that was the day when I suddenly was like, oh, like, I can just choose where I want to be. And that was my first time trying that. So, yeah, I think, like, it could be really, really fun to do some queening, and could like, help me find some new points on the spectrum that I haven't found yet.
So, I mean, when you do get into drag, do you see that as another character? Is it an alter ego? Is it, you know, still yourself but a different version? You know, what does your drag persona mean to you?
I think it's a mix for me. I think it's a space where I am able to sort of play with lots of versions of myself and still feel like grounded in who I am, as opposed to having to engage different parts of myself like I have to do every day just to, like, move through the world. So Wesley is a little bit of me, but also a little bit of like lots of other versions of masculinity that I've seen in the world, and I think he helps me know parts of myself better as well.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I think so this is definitely something that I, so like my I say my drag character is Izzy a man, but like there isn't really for me a set character. Like he doesn't do a huge amount of talking, so it's not, I know some drag queens, it's like, oh, you know, they've got a mic and they'll be like chatting to you and they've got all their sort of ways of being. That's not really how I do my drag. Like it tends to be specific acts that I've built in quite a lot of detail, and they'll often be like lip sync or found audio or even like a tribute to someone else. So like I've done a Prince one before, and like Action Hero, where I did loads of Action Hero movies. So I would say he's more of a sort of like a prism through which I can then like explore whatever the thing is that I want to explore in the act. I think maybe when we started out, like a lot of us had these quite rigid ideas about like, because it's, you know, it's quite a fun like early stage thing to do, to be like, oh, who's my king, and I'm going to decide all these things about it, and I'm going to like parody masculinity in these ways, or, you know, interrogate it, whatever it might be. But then actually as you go along, you realize that like it is kind of a part of you as well, and actually there's more fruit to be like gleaned from letting it be looser, or at least letting it be more specific but more variably at different times. And like I think something that I've loved doing with Pex has been not just going for the hyper masculine all the time. Like, you know, in our 80s show we had a David Bowie tribute, had a Prince tribute, you know, these are men who don't wear conventional masculinity very heavily, you know. Freddie Mercury, Wham, we love exploring the camp stuff, you know, the more effeminate stuff as well. So yeah, I think it's really lovely to just think of it as like, Izzy a man is me in drag, but what that looks like on any given day or in any given show could be a world of things. Yeah.
One of the sort of best pieces of advice I got for drag, for doing drag kinging, was that don't think about what things are like masculine or manly. Think about people who you think are masculine or who are men, and think about them and how they are. And like that changes the whole conversation about what masculinity is, because like you said, from Prince to Dwayne Johnson to who else, I don't know, to Kanye West, that's like a lot of different types of masculinities, but all those people are men, and all those people would probably be classed as pretty manly, like I would say. Like even like diehard cis hetero men love Prince, like they don't know why.
And he got all the like, girls, let's be honest, like, I mean, he got all the girls.
People don't know why. And even looking back at the sort of like 70s and 80s and how fashion evolves and how people wore clothes and showed off their bodies and this sort of thing, it's like, you can't tell me that masculinity is anything specific. It's not really real. Like, have you seen those damn 70s costumes?
Oh, the eye makeup, the eyeliner, like
that video for like Midas Touch, or that song, was it going, oh my god, the gold suit, I was just like,
or like all the courtly men in their like 1800s and their high heels and like wigs and powder, and you're like,
exactly,
like that was the definition of masculinity at the time, like
literally.
Yeah, and it's constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've kind of just touched on this, but I suppose I wanted to end by kind of asking, you know, what you've learned about just gender and sexuality in general from doing drag that you kind of passed on into your everyday life, or that you passed on to friends, or that you wish your audience would take on, just about, you know, how they see their own identity that you've learned from doing drag.
I think a big one for me was like, know the rules that you're living by and decide for yourself whether you actually want to abide by them. That was the thing for me.
Amen.
Damn. The bars, though.
Honestly, just might
like
drop.
Live how you want, but at least like have made that decision for yourself. And that was the big realization for me, was just like, oh, actually, like I've always made my hips move in this way, and actually, I don't want to do that. It's tiring and it doesn't serve me, so I'm just going to stop. And then suddenly, you're moving through the world in a whole new way. That's much more you.
That's so real. So real. Ooh. That was a good one. How am I going to follow that up?
No pressure.
I think it's just like, who are, like, you, like, yeah, no, you're right, like, Isabel. I think it's a lot to do with just like, who are you without these definitions? Like, if someone's not calling you a woman, someone's not calling you a man, and someone's not saying she this or he this, or that's never referred to, like, what does that mean for your life? Like, just think about it, I guess.
Challenge yourself almost. Yeah,
just engage with it. Like, I think that's the thing, is that people take out their discomfort on those of us in the community, like trans women who, or black trans women who are visibly like challenging those ideas. People take out their discomfort on them, they take out their discomfort on us. It's like, keep your discomfort inside and talk about it with yourself. Like, stop bringing your damn trauma to people's like doorsteps.
Deal with your own damn, like, goddamn trauma. Like, don't put that on me.
Just have,
like,
a conversation. Stand in front of the mirror and be like,
yeah,
what? Like, if I didn't have to tick man or woman on this box, what would it mean for me? Do I still love myself?
Mm.
Why? Why not?
It's kind of that old idea of, you know, people that bully are not happy in their own lives.
Yeah.
And it's sad that, you know, that's something we learn in the playground, but then it truly transcends into adulthood. And it's like, go get therapy.
Yeah, like we're not being kitted out at all with the emotional skills to process that thing. I feel like coming into being an adult, quote unquote, just, I feel like adults are just most people are just old children.
I feel like I just got told about myself. I'm like, damn, I need to sit with that.
Oh, it's so true. Oh, God. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for being on this week's episode. Like, I really loved hearing your stories and about your work. Where can people find you on social media? Where can people find out about your work and where to see you live and all that good stuff?
I am at Mr. Wesley Dykes on most things. I'm mostly on Instagram, occasionally on Twitter, but that's rare, so find me on Instagram. And I've got a show at the Cocoa Butter Club on the 17th and 18th of September at Underbelly in South Bank. Yeah.
I am at Bellfrog, B-E-L-L-E Frog, on Instagram. And Pex is at Pex Drag Kings. Pex as in pectoral muscles.
just to be clear.
Just to be clear. Was that not clear? Pectoral muscles. And yeah, we've got a show about to open at the Soho Theatre. We're running from the 30th of August to the 4th of September. And then we've got various things running through autumn. So yeah, come join us. Come check it out.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did and maybe learned a new couple of things too. Don't forget to follow and keep in touch with Dope Black Women every week, and to keep up with everything we do and everything we post, follow us on Instagram at Dope Black Women 1 and on Facebook and Twitter at Dope Black Women. See you next week.